Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to all of our Tenpenny Files premium podcast members who are listening to these special deep dive podcasts that are done especially just for you. We also hope that you enjoy the special events that we've done over the last few months, that you now have lifetime access to, and that you get emails from us with special discount codes for products, apparel, webinars, and more. And we just do that as a thank you for your monthly support is what buoys us up and helps us to go forward and to grow. So during these deep dive interviews, we have a personal conversation with our guests on This Week with Dr. T about what inspires them. And so you can pull back the curtain and find out a little bit more about who they really are. So let me introduce to you today, today's deep dive special guest, Karen Strawn. Karen Strawn is based in Edmonton, Alberta. She is a critic of feminism and an advocate for men's rights, a mother of three children, and best known for her YouTube channel on Girl Rights What. She participates regularly on Honey Badger Radio, a podcast that focuses on men issues. She has also given presentations across North America on feminism and on men and masculinity. We had a very interesting conversation this morning on This Week with Dr. T. And if you missed it, you can go into your podcast area and you can see it there in perpetuity, because as a premium podcast member, you have lifetime access to all the interviews that we do. So Karen, good morning. Thank you for being with us for a few extra minutes here this morning. So we talk about who Karen is a little bit more.
I don't know if you want to know that.
But we do. We want to see, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. I mean, and I know that because some of the videos that I watched on your YouTube channel were from 10 and 11 years ago. So you've been really a men's advocate for a really, really long time. So if I were to take you up in an airplane or a spaceship somewhere, and you could see the whole world and you could see things from a political, spiritual, you know, socioeconomic perspective, whatever, wherever it kind of floats your boat, what do you think maybe universally might be the biggest problem that we have in the world today?
The corrupted relationship between men and women. I think that that's probably, you know, and all of the disruption that it causes to family formation and procreation and the successful upbringing of healthy, well-adjusted children, all of those things. Like, if you look at the nuclear family, even beyond the extended families, if you think of the extended family, society is a tree. The extended family is a twig on that tree, and the nuclear family is, you know, is a wood fiber in that twig. And so it's basically, you're looking at this entire edifice, this entire structure, that where the nuclear family, the biological parents and their children are the base unit of everything that we have. And that base unit depends on a healthy relationship, I guess, or overall view. Women have a healthy view of men. Men have a healthy view of women. That's what it depends on. You know, I think it was Jonathan Haidt. He's a social psychologist, I believe. He said that you don't see civilizations in their early stage, looking back all through history, without temples. And I've often thought, well, you also don't see any kind of society that made the jump from a society to a civilization. You don't see any of that without monogamous marriage being the primary, you know, the most common form of family formation. And that monogamous marriage being considered lifelong. I mean, even in societies that allow for polygamy, that you would consider civilizations like Mesopotamia and, you know, even, you know, Abraham, things like that, right? The Abrahamic beginnings, Judaism and even Christianity. If you have the majority of your family units being one man, one woman raising their own children, that it seems to be what helps a society achieve the status of, you know, the sort of technological and cultural milestones that we would consider civilization. So I think that that's it's God is one, temples, very important. Having some kind of religion seems to bind societies together in a common cause, around a common central ethic and toward common goals. And the nuclear family is another of those pillars that produce civilizations out of societies. So.
That's really interesting. And I think you're spot on. I totally agree with you on that, about the nuclear family. And I've talked about this a lot. You know, my big thing is about teaching people about the problems with vaccines. And, you know, parents nowadays, young parents, when their child gets the slightest little bit of a runny nose or a fever, they go running off to the pediatrician. Where back in extended families, it used to be like if I was the mom with a brand new baby, I would go to my mother or my grandmother or my aunt or even my sister, if I had an older sister that had raised several children, and say, is my baby sick enough to go to the doctors or anything else I need to be doing? They go, no, they're just teething. They're just like that. That's what happens, you know? Yeah. And so we don't do those things anymore. We abdicate our decision-making on all sorts of levels to other people rather than within our own nuclear family of what has been that way forever. So I think that you're absolutely right about that. I agree with you. So I want to ask you, you know, you've been doing this, like I said, for a long time, at least 10 years, because those were some of the YouTube videos that I watched. And you're married and you have three kids. What drives you? Why do you stay in this fight? And what keeps you engaged in on this particular issue?
Oh, it's a lot of things. You know, it's good to have multiple motivations for any given endeavor. So I'm happy to report that some of it is petty. Some of it is someone is wrong on the internet, and they need to be corrected. And some of it is deeply personal. Like I said, you know, like when I stumbled across all of this information, you know, and I always knew that feminism was, you know, like sort of the underpinning narrative of feminism, which is women have always been oppressed by a society that men constructed, right? That, you know, men oppress women for men's benefit. I always knew that that was not the case. I grew up in a family of strong women and kind men, all of whom worked together. I don't even think I ever heard one of my parents tell the other to shut up the entire time I was growing up.
Wow.
As it's not like they didn't have disagreements. They absolutely did. My mom voted for Pierre Trudeau. My dad was furious. You know, but not Justin, though. She didn't vote for Justin. But, you know, like they were always respectful with each other, and they operated in that family, in the family structure. They were like a well-oiled machine, you know. And so I always knew feminism was garbage, just in the terms of the description, right? Or it's diagnosis, right? You know, you can agree that the rights of women, the freedoms of women, certain aspects of the laws that govern men and women, all of those things should have been renegotiated over time as the environment changed, as women did have more, I guess, pragmatic access to work outside the home, right? That they the advent of birth control, including condoms back in the late 1800s, and all of these things that that changed the situation such that, you know, women could go out and work where prior to that, it would not have been a good situation for women to be in. You know, like women would not choose to do that because they just don't feel fulfilled in at the home, right? They just don't have enough to do. I mean, like the Betty Friedan's problem with No Name, I think it was hers, that she coined that term, but it was boredom, right? You know, there'd been a transition to living in suburbia, and women's homes had been filled with conveniences, and we don't think of them as conveniences anymore, but dishwashers and washing machines and dryers and vacuum cleaners and all of these things that turned a 14-hour day of keeping a house and feeding a family, turned that into a, you know, maybe a 4-hour day. And then these women who are kind of isolated in their suburban neighborhoods, not crammed in cheek by jowl in a, you know, in Manhattan or wherever. They got bored. They got bored. They didn't feel self-actualized. They lost a sense of purpose. And feminism encouraged them to feel that way, and then encouraged them to think that being a wage slave would fulfill them. And I don't think that I think for most women don't have careers. Most women have jobs, you know, and a lot of the time, those women who have jobs are doing exactly the types of work that they would be doing in the home, right? They're cleaning, they're cooking, they're serving food, they're serving drinks, they're looking after children, right? They're doing all of these things that they would be doing domestically if they didn't have to work. So,
That's interesting. That's very
yeah.
interesting. Yeah. And
But
really, ever I never really
I
considered that, but you're right. That's interesting.
yeah, and I feel like the feminist you know, I used to call it theory, then I started calling it hypothesis, then I started calling it conjecture. Now I call it a false accusation, a malicious false accusation against men. Right? If you believe that your great grandfather went along with a system that was set up to deliberately harm his mother, his wife, his daughters, his sisters, right? If you believe that, then you have to believe that. And if you believe that men did that willingly, despite having their first experience of love, comfort, safety, and sustenance from a woman, their mother, right? Social interaction. Babies are born no being able to recognize the language that their mother speaks. Day one of life, if you spoke English the whole time you were pregnant, when they hear someone speaking, when they hear you speak, they're very interested. When they hear someone else speak English, they're quite interested. When they hear somebody speaking Chinese, it doesn't even register with them. They're not interested. And it's because that was the first social interaction. That was their first sense of safety and security. That was their first, you know, this is where the mother carries the baby. The mother brings the baby into the world. The mother, the baby goes from the mother's womb to the mother's arms and the mother's breast, and then the mother's table, where there's some abstract thing that dad has to do outside the house, and it's called a job, and apparently it's responsible for all of this food that I can see my mom putting in front of me, right? And so you think, okay, if men couldn't learn to love and respect women despite women dominating their lives, right? As the sole or primary source of comfort, care, love, you know, easing of their fears, soothing them when they're sick, kissing their boo-boos better, all of those things. If they couldn't learn to respect and love women enough to not oppress them, if they couldn't learn that during the first 5, 6, 7 years of life, when women are the primary people providing them care and love and attention, right? Then obviously men are sociopaths, right? They're obviously there's something biologically wrong with them. And I'm not prepared to accept people saying that about an entire class of people whose only sin was being born male. And this is the pervasive narrative. And it's no wonder there are men out there who want to transition. I knew a trans woman for quite some time who told me, I used to sometimes go out as male, when I was transitioning, when I was not quite sure. Sometimes I'd go out as male, sometimes I'd go out as a woman. And everyone was so much nicer to me when they thought I was a woman. Like
Interesting.
everyone was kind, everyone was helpful. If I dropped something and had trouble picking it up, somebody would come and help, right? People commented that I looked nice, not in a lascivious way, but like they would just say, "Oh, you look really nice," or "That's a beautiful dress," or I love your hair, or whatever. And it's just like, and this is from both men and women. And men might go, they might have a dry spell of 2 years between compliments on their looks from anyone. She just said people were polite, people were nice, people were courteous. And it wasn't the case when I went out as a man out in public. So people were suspicious. People were worried that maybe I was going to do something. People were standoffish. People didn't want to make chit chat, at the bus stop. People didn't want to reach out and interact with me socially in any way. Right? I was basically invisible. So
Interesting.
I can see why there is just in addition to certain biological factors, I can see why there's intense social pressure. There's a message that men are bad and wrong. And I have two sons and one daughter, and that's not the message that I want them to internalize about them, about men, right? Not even their father, who was far from perfect. That's not how I want my boys to feel about themselves, and that's not how I want my daughter to view the opposite sex with whom, the class of people with whom she will eventually form a family and have children, right? So
Interesting.
it's not okay. And when
That's
you think about it,
really
boys are hearing this too, right? Boys from the age of like 6, 7, 8, 9. Right. I mean, it's one thing for a grown man who has a strong sense of self and a healthy ego and he's confident and all of that to be bombarded with this negativity. He can shrug it off. It's like water off a duck's back. But for boys, it's poison.
Yeah, this whole concept of toxic masculinity when boys are just being boys, because we don't want them. When they're just exercising masculinity, they're just boys being boys. We have labeled it toxic if they get a little bit angry or something like that. And so I think that that's really, really a good point. Well, let's change gears just a little bit and do a couple of quick, easy, fun questions. Quick answers here for these couple of things. What do you like to do for fun?
I guess correct people who are wrong on the internet. I mean, I'm not a really a hobby person, so I guess watching movies. I mean, I've got my favorites. Gran Torino, Gladiator, Heartbreak Ridge, 13th Warrior. Usually a lot of men killing each other and Last of the Mohicans, all-time favorite movie. Daniel Day-Lewis and Madeline Stowe are just absolutely stellar in that, and the final 15, 20 minutes is just glorious. Best cinematography I think I've ever seen. So, but yeah, no, it was I watching movies, hanging out with my husband, and having family dinners with my extended family, I guess.
That's cool. Where would you say is your favorite place that you've been, either domestically or internationally?
Oh, favorite place that I've ever been, Drumheller. Sounds weird, but I really liked the it's kind of like you're driving along the highway and then the ground just opens up. It's not quite the Grand Canyon, but it's like you don't see anything and then all of a sudden it's there. And it's full of dinosaur bones.
Oh,
And that's
wow.
awesome, right? And it's got all these rock formations and stuff, and it's very, very cool. Another place, Tofino, Botanical Beach, just near Tofino there, which is on Vancouver Island. That was a great place. So,
That's
the tide pools come out, and then you see all the starfish and the urchins and all of that stuff in these little tide pools, just hanging out. So.
Well, you obviously from the things that you've said, and you're a writer, you're a blogger, so that means you've read a fair amount. Do you have a favorite book or author or book genre that you like to read the most if when you have the time?
Oh, I used to read a lot of fantasy fiction and science fiction. And I guess probably Stephen R. Donaldson, his Gap series, which was science fiction, not for the faint of heart. If you don't like I guess watching or reading about bad people who do very bad things to good people who aren't 100% good, because I don't think he's ever written a character that was like 100% innocent or good. But that was probably my favorite series of books. Lord of the Rings was one that I read and reread and reread. I think I read it the first time through when I was nine, something like that. So.
So, when one last question, when you pass on, how would you like to be remembered?
With a party and an improv comedy routine. Yeah, no, I want people to I want people to tell jokes about me and just remember all the funny things. That's what we did with my dad when he passed away in 2021. We all got together. It wasn't sad. It wasn't a funeral, it was a memorial, open house thing. And people would just come by and we'd just all share the funny stories about him and remember him that way. And he was a funny guy. Near the end, he kept recycling the same jokes, but pull my finger, that was that he recycled that one my entire life. So.
Well, as we close out today, Karen, remind us again where we can best follow you and follow your YouTube channel and your blog post. Where could people find that?
Okay, the blog is owningyourshit.blogspot.com. My Twitter handle is @girlwriteswhat, and my YouTube channel is Girl Writes What. And there's so much material there. Nothing over the last 4 years or so, nothing much. But if you watch the videos in order, then you'll probably get. There's a few drama videos in there just dealing with internet people, but doing bad things. But most of like the men's rights and feminism videos, there's playlists for those. And yeah, no, if you want to know what I'm ta when I'm talking about the collapse of society, you can just search for a video called Fempocalypse. And I think 34 trillion in debt. I think we could add 10 more before things start really falling apart. So, and where the US goes, so go all, right? So.
Yes, for sure. Well, thank you so much for getting up early out there in Canada this morning and having this great conversation with us that I have really, really enjoyed, and I know our listeners have too. We've been speaking this morning with Karen Strawn from who is an anti-feminist and pro men's rights. So I want to thank everybody for at our premium podcast member area this morning. These special deep dive interviews are just for you. Your monthly support is, I can't tell you from the bottom of my heart how much I thank you for that. It's what keeps us going, and it's what supports everything that we do. So with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again next week, mark your calendars again, same week, same time. We will meet at This Week with Dr. T, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Have a great week, everyone. Goodbye and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.